What I care about is she goes way over there to have this conversation and turns her back to
my
me.
My daddy may now make an announcement.
Hey, welcome back to The Bitterest Pill. I think that's what this is. It's Dan Class recording under the flight path of Los Angeles International Airport. Thursday, September 7th, 2006. I'm not recording in the normal studio. I'm recording in the garage. I can't record in the house anymore because my wife is always home. And I just can't do the show when there's someone home. Or at least when there's someone home and they're awake. And it doesn't even really have anything to do anymore with whether or not she's on the phone. It has to do with the fact that she's home. And I don't know, it's kind of a weird thing. I can't do the show knowing that she can hear it while I'm doing it. But then obviously I upload it to the internet and well over a dozen people download it and listen to it around the world. So there's just something about knowing that someone can hear me do this while I'm doing it. It just doesn't not work. So here I am, I'm in the garage. The garage is not a recording studio. The garage is a garage. It's an ornate shack into which, you normally would put a car. We have just filled it with all the stuff that is not in the house. There's a refrigerator in here, which that's the sound that you hear. At least it's the sound I hear. But not only can I hear the refrigerator, I can hear the fridge. I can hear the airplanes that go by. Every dog that barks, every car that drives by, I can hear Mike. You know Wacky Mike? Lives next door. My wacky neighbor, Wacky Mike. He has a pool. And I guess it's the filter or something, is right along our fence line, our common fence line, so you can hear that too. There's not a software package in the world that can strip all this out of the recording, so good luck to all of us. But I'm ready to get back to the show. And so here I am in the garage. Here I am in the garage with the refrigerator going. It's a little too dark in this little... So I'm in a corner. In the back of the garage, I'm leaning against this wooden cabinet that is full of paint and rat droppings. I'm looking at the unfinished wall here in the garage, you know, with that kind of black tar paper and the studs. And I'm sitting at a card table with all of my equipment that I've very hastily brought out here today because I just had to do a show. I had to do a show, and yet I really have nothing to say other than... Well, of course, I have plenty to say. But I did want to say thanks for staying subscribed. And I don't know that I'll ever talk about the show on the show ever again. So there you have it. We are now done. My wife and I spent an afternoon in Newport Beach this summer. Newport Beach is a very upscale city here in Southern California. Newport Beach looks like it's so clean. It's so white and so surreal. It's so upscale. Like, there's no middle scale in Newport Beach. There's all the upscale people, and then there's the people hiding in the kitchen preparing your food. Newport Beach looks like an artist's rendering of Newport Beach that will eventually be built. It looks like a scale model of itself sitting on some architect's conference table. It doesn't look like an actual city. And yet there it is. Now, Melissa and I went there because we need a will. Or at least I thought we needed a will. It turns out we need a trust. A living trust. Because a will just isn't going to cut it. Now, so what you do is you count up all your assets. You know, your loan to value of your home. Because you don't own your home. You only own how much your home is appreciated since you quote unquote bought it. And let's face it, you didn't buy it. The bank bought it. You bought a mortgage. But you add up that, you add up your life insurance policies, you know, what they might pay out in the event of your demise, and you head off to an attorney. Now, in this case, it was an attorney, is an attorney, whose mother is our accountant. And it's always kind of an interesting thing because she continues to refer to her mother by her mother's first name, Jill. She keeps referring to Jill, and I keep referring to her mom. Now, I don't know if that's unprofessional of me. To keep saying, oh, your mom said, you know what I mean? Because, see, I'm a human. I'm not actually a business person. And I suppose in business I should have said, well, you know, Jill said, and not your mom. Is that demeaning to the attorney? Is it demeaning to the attorney to refer to her mother as your mom and not Jill? I don't know the answer to these questions. I'm a 17-year-old in a middle-aged body. But what you do is you add up all your assets, and you add up all your, you know, what you're worth dead, basically. And you come to this figure, and it's actually a somewhat impressive figure until you realize that you're not worth that unless you croak. So if Melissa and I were to croak, the kids would have, you know, a nice chunk of change. It's an impressive sounding figure at first until you realize how much a house is, or a car, college tuition. We figured out that by the time Tolu is in kindergarten, we'll be paying in the neighborhood of, you know, $30,000 in elementary school costs. So that number is a pittance. Trust me. I have to have a drink of water. Hold on. So the attorney recommends, though, and I got to tell you, I don't fully understand the differences, but she recommends a trust. Now, this was several months ago, so this is all kind of filtered out of my head, but apparently you can contest a will much more easily than a trust or a living trust or whatever this is. And a trust is, you know, it's a trust, like a trust, you ever heard of a trust fund? You know what I mean? It's almost like a little company or a little pot. It's a guarded pot that you put all your stuff in, this pot. And then when you die, the pot is controlled then by whoever controls the trust. But what you have to do when you're making out your will or your trust or whatever it is, you and your wife or, you know, your spouse, whomever, need to decide who gets what and when and how. But it revolves around, really, a long conversation about what the other person's going to do in the event that you die. Which, to me, honestly, not such a hot topic. So eventually you start to have the conversation, if you die, will your spouse's new spouse have access to the money in the pot? And Melissa and I actually get into somewhat of an argument about whether her potentially future husband should have access to the pot. Now, I'm saying, no, I don't want him to have access to the pot. I want her to have access to the pot. I want Hudson and Tolu to have access to this pot. But I don't think this guy, whoever this guy is, horning on my wife, you know, she's grieving over me. And he comes in and suddenly he should have access to this pot. No way. So I say, you know what, I don't think he should have access to the pot. I think we should set it up so, you know, that doesn't work. Okay. So then we have to decide whether my supposed future ex-wife, whatever, should have access to the pot. Now, to avoid the topic, I say to my wife and to the attorney and her assistant, Melissa, in the event of your death, I would just spend the rest of my life crying. And so I don't need to worry about whether my future wife, after you, needs access to the money, because that's not going to happen. But because there's an attorney in the room, and because you really are actually dealing with a serious topic and you're not just having a romantic conversation over dinner, we actually have to have this conversation about what my future wife may or may not have access to. So Melissa says, well, you know, honey, by the time that were to happen, don't you think this woman would maybe have her own stuff, so she wouldn't need access to the pot anyway? So I don't think she needs to have access to the pot. And I say, well, you know, maybe she would, because I would imagine typically a 22, 23-year-old, you know, right out of college, aspiring model probably doesn't have any assets. Now, the attorney is a woman. The assistant's a woman. My wife, clearly a woman. They didn't think this was very funny at all. The implication that my future wife would be a 22 or 23-year-old aspiring model somehow was not found as very humorous. Perfectly okay to talk about some stockbroker or magazine editor or fine artist, whatever, coming, living with my children, raising my children, watching my daughter bathe or whatever. That's perfectly fine. But for me to insinuate for even 10 seconds, after stating that all I would do after my wife dies is cry, Suddenly I'm an a-hole because I say, well, if I were to get married, you know, she might only be a 22 or 23-year-old aspiring lingerie model. Because I figure, you know what, once your heart has been crushed and you're really hollow inside, you might as well at least have an attractive woman wandering around the house. So there was actually tension after this meeting. Honestly, when I'm gone, you know, I don't think I really need to have much of a say in what goes on. And Melissa found it very hard to resist pointing out that this money that I'm so desperately trying to protect from her future husband is money she made. Because, let's face it, if you're a stay-at-home dad, and you know that this is true, it's not like being a stay-at-home mom. When you're a stay-at-home mom, there's really, honestly, no expectation that you're ever going to get a full-time job and take over the finances of the family. And if you're a stay-at-home dad, honestly, guys, just admit it right now, because you know it's true. I know she makes $50,000 more than you ever made in your entire life, because she made very business-minded decisions, because she was a woman, and for a woman in the job market, big new thing, and you made very kind of different choices, because, you know, guys have been in the workplace, and your folks said you could do anything. Next thing you know, you're a liberal arts major at, you know, Podunk U. Your wife wants you eventually to get the job and take over. Because you're a man. You're having male anatomy down there in your underwear really honestly requires that eventually you start bringing in the cash. Or you're going to hear about it. At the very least, when you're working out the details of your trust. So because there's tension, let's go see a movie. Great. Now, because we'd already eaten. We ate before the meeting. I had an incredibly delicious and very sloppy pastrami, some kind of sandwich. You know what I mean? Why in an upscale restaurant would you make such a sloppy sandwich? Was I supposed to eat the whole thing with a knife and fork? Because I'm one of those guys, I always want to seem a little more macho because I'm not actually that macho. I'm always surrounded by macho guys at least trying to be macho. I don't watch sports, do any of that. You know what I mean? Maybe a good kung fu movie, but not sports. So here I got this big fat fancy restaurant sandwich in Newport Beach. It doesn't look like anyone has ever littered in there. Honestly, I'm fairly certain that if they found out how much money I make, I would instantly be ejected from Newport Beach. But I need someone to come along and say, sir, it's okay to use the knife and fork. You won't look like a baby. So slightly traumatized by this sandwich, although it was very good. Now we've had this argument about my future wife. Even though I've claimed that I'm never going to have it. Now we're going to go see a movie. And as we're waiting in line. Now, first of all, the movies to see it in that moment were Superman Returns or Begins or whatever he does. Here comes Superman. And Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Amusement Park Ride. Now, I ended up really liking the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Keira Knightley, yum yum. But also just in general, I liked it. So we go to see the movie. We get our tickets. Now Melissa gets a call from her boss. So she wanders off and has this very long and somewhat passionate conversation with her boss. And time is ticking by and time is ticking by and we're going to go see this movie. But Melissa, see, I'm in line and it's a holiday. Was it a holiday weekend? No, but it was early in the run of this movie. So I was very concerned about our place in line. But Melissa has decided to go stand way far away from me, out of earshot, to have this conversation, which, you know, is fine. Honestly, I don't want to hear the call. I don't want to hear this conversation being had again. I don't need to know anything about it. I don't want to know. I don't care. What I care about is she goes way over there to have this conversation and turns her back to me. So she cannot see the line. She cannot see me. She cannot see when the line starts moving into the building. So I am the whole time worried. What am I going to do? I'm standing in line. We're maybe fourth back. You know what I mean? We're doing well. We got a good position in the line. You got to hold your position. Okay. What if the line starts to move? Then what do I do? Do I just stand there at the door and wait and see how many people they let in before she notices that the line is moving? Do I go get her? But if I go get her, we're going to end up at the back of the line. Then where are we going to see Johnny Depp? So as I'm fretting over this, I realize that in front of me, in this line, is a man and his mother, I believe, and two children. Let's say 5 and 3, 5 and 2, 4.5 and 18 months, waiting in line to see Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, the last Pirates of the Caribbean had skeleton guys that would come to life and fight. You know, with swords and knives. Demented, demonic monkeys, and pirating. General, you know what pirates do? They kind of rape, they pillage, they steal, they plunder. Really, in my mind, am I crazy? Not appropriate for a whatever age group we're dealing with here? You should be home watching The Wiggles or The Wibblies or something. Watch, go listen to Dr. Floyd, but you shouldn't be in line to see Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Amusement Park ride. And I'm kind of waiting to see if maybe they're in the wrong line. But I can't see the marquee, so I can't, and I'm not going to get out of line just to see the marquee to see what movie I think they should be there for, because isn't there like Over the Hedge or Cars or something? Shouldn't they be something by Pixar? Or somebody trying to be Pixar? There's got to be something going on. No, they're there to see Pirates of the Caribbean. Am I the only one who's not insane? Am I the only one who's not so stinking selfish they would take their kids to see that movie? Did you take your kids to see Pirates of the Caribbean? Do you want your child traumatized, or do you want your child whacking the bejesus out of all the other kids with a wooden sword when they get home? No. Suddenly the line is moving. Suddenly the line, honey, the line is moving. The line, hello, honey? Okay, honey? Okay, she's coming, she's coming. So we go in. We get some beverages. You know, I think we even got popcorn. I was in Soho this summer. We went to New York for a little while. I went to Soho to go to the Apple Store, and I wasn't sure how to get from our friend's apartment to the Apple Store in the time that I had allotted. I didn't have much time to get there, and so I thought, I'm going to just take a cab, and we'll see how it goes. So I'm up at 19th Street and something like 9th Avenue, and I hail a cab. I get in, we cruise, you know, you cruise down, but then I had to go kind of cross town, and honestly, I get very lost in downtown Manhattan. Soho, Greenwich Village. Midtown is very simple. You get 54th Street, and then it goes 55th Street, and then you go 56th Street, and kind of goes like that, you know? The Avenue is pretty much the same way. They throw Broadway in there and a couple others to kind of keep you on your toes, Park Avenue, you know what I mean? But then you get downtown. Somebody's calling me. Well, you know what? You should have called me hours ago, okay? You get downtown. And you got your Bleecker, Christopher, you got your this, you got your that. They bend, they twist, they turn. I don't know where Soho is, because I don't know where Ho is. Soho is south of Ho. Where the heck is Ho? Where's Houston? I don't know. So I take the cab. So we jet downtown on one of the major avenues, and then we got to cut in a little bit and head east. So we're down, and we're in these little, you know, tight streets. And I realize that the cabbie, he's kind of getting into, what's a nice way of putting it? A pee-pee contest with the driver of another car. There's this white sedan, just kind of like this, you know, your average American four-door sedan. And the guy driving the sedan and the cabbie keep trying to cut each other off and get ahead of each other. The cabbie's not letting the other guy in, and the other guy's not letting the cabbie in. Because, you know, there's cars parked these tiny little streets. They were not made for modern traffic. So these guys are really upsetting each other. They're flipping each other the bird, everything. Well, after my cabbie flips him the bird, I kind of look back. I think I can see in the rearview mirror. The guy is in the car with a woman, and one of them is reaching under their seat. And I think, oh boy, you know what? She has got him torqued up. And so he's going to write down the medallion number, and they're going to tattletale on my cabbie for driving, you know, because whenever you're in LA, everybody's got a bumper sticker that says, how's my driving? Tattle on me by calling 1-800, you know, I stink, right? So they're fumbling around for what I assume is a pad, a pen, something. And just as we turned the corner to head over to Grand Street or wherever I was going, I hear this pop, 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 rat-a-tat-tat on the back windshield of the car. The guy was getting out a gun, some kind of gun. He was shooting the cab. He was shooting the taxi, the back windshield. Now, I'm in the back of the cab. That's where you ride, in a cab, in a cab, in the back of the cab. This guy is he's shooting the back windshield of the car with some sort of gun, pellets or BBs or whatever. My reaction to this is, oh, that's so quaint. That is so New York. That is so 21st century. That's so great. He's rat-a-tat-tatting us with little BBs or something. That's so cute. I think this is it. Yeah, I'll get out right here. Because when I moved to LA, man, and I don't know, it's not like that anymore. We've had real drive-by shootings. In that situation, I may have lost in head. But it was just so, I'll get my girlfriend, I'll hand me my little BB gun, and I'll bang, 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 the taxi cab. I don't know, they do crazy stuff there. It's so cute. And it reminded me of when I was back in Fairport, where I grew up, Fairport, New York, outside of Rochester. We had our big class reunion. And there was this night before the class reunion, was this big thing at a bar, Shorts, in Fairport. And I remember leaving that night, I drove with my friend Gordy, and Gordy lives in LA. And we went outside, we were going to go get in his car and go back to his mom's. And just across the parking lot of this, where we had parked, is another club. It was like more of a clubby club. And these two guys are outside of the club just beating the hell out of each other. Just fists and arms and fists. You know, you've ever seen one of those fights where it's just, like, there's no sense to it. It's just flailing. Just flailing and flailing and more flailing. And Gordy and I stood there like we were watching a peacock cross the road, because there was just this sense of calm about it. There was absolutely no fear that it was going to escalate into anything. They were just going to swing their fists and then, maybe some more. New York is so awesome. What time is it? Yeah, I got to go. Listen, that's all I have time for now. Here's some news, though. The Portable Media Expo is coming up. If you're a podcaster and you're not going to that, you really should be. If you are going to that, please stop by the LA Podcasters booth. I can't tell you the number. I don't remember. We're going to be right next to iProng. Sort of semi-sharing a space with iProng. They're sponsoring the LA Podcasters booth. Check them out at iProng.com. They're also sponsoring the LA Podcasters live show. What was the other thing? Oh, hey, you know what? Did you know? I didn't know anything about this. The Bitters Pill is a finalist for a podcast peer award. Did you know anything about this? If you're a podcaster like I am, I'm a finalist for a podcast peer award. So if you're part of this podcast peer thing, this is all brand new to me. I didn't know anything about it. If you're part of this thing, or you want to be part of this thing, you want to vote for the show, go to thebitterestpill.com and I'll have a link there. I can't tell you what it is now because I'm in the garage. But check, we're a finalist in the storytelling category, along with Zedcast, P.W. Fenton from Digital Flotsam, Seventh Son. It seems kind of weird, honestly, that we're in with the same category as Seventh Son. Right, Mr. Hutchins? It's kind of odd, right? Okay. But tune into the next Bitters Pill where I talk about being a clone. I hope the airplane sounds and the refrigerator sounds are not too annoying. We'll see. But I really do thank you for tuning back in. I hope you had a great summer. I'm very anxious to get back to the pill. Very anxious to see and feel and hear how it evolves. But thanks for your emails. I really do appreciate them. 1 and all, 206-309-PILL is our phone number. And next time, a very, very dear friend of mine suffered, family of friends of mine suffered a tremendous loss recently. So I think next time I'm going to tell a very depressing story about death. So tune in for that. Tune in for that to hear Dan talk about mass murder on the Bitter Spill. All right, thanks for listening.
The Bitter Spill is produced by Jacket Media. DeckettMedia.com, makers of fine podcasts since 2004.